We're going to start in the first book, in the first verse. Should be easy to find. Genesis chapter 1. And I wanted to share today on a God of might and miracles. Genesis chapter 1. There's a great record in the book of Romans about Abraham. I think of this verse often throughout my life anyway. I really love the verse, and I'm sure you do too. It's where he says that Abraham never staggered at the promise of God. He trusted God. But the thing that I really love is where it says that he knew that God was able and willing to do that which he had promised. That he was not only not just willing, but also able. Not just able, but also willing. Both that not only does he want to bless people, but he has the ability to bless people, and to do what his word says that he will do. And I, for me, as soon as you believe Genesis chapter 1 verse 1, that sets a foundation for us to be able to believe anything. What does the first verse in the Bible say? It says, "In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth." That's it. In the beginning, sometime in the beginning, out of nothingness or whatever was there, we don't know, because our ways and thoughts aren't like God's ways. He understands that. Just because we don't understand it doesn't mean there wasn't something. You see, God knows more than we do, thankfully. That's a figure of speech, because God knows a whole heck of a lot more than we do, right? God knows more than we do. So as soon as you read Genesis 1:1, you see where the Bible starts? God says, "I want you to believe that in the beginning, I created the heaven and the earth." So later on, you know, I read a lot of people's opinions of things that happen in the Bible. You know, they go, "Well, how could this have possibly happened? And how could Noah possibly have had all those animals on the boat? And how could, all these things?" And people come up with these various theories. Well, it wasn't all the animals, only a certain kind, all these theories. And they never go back to Genesis 1, verse 1, right? As soon as you believe that God created the heaven and the earth, that means all the planets, stars, and all of that. Well, you think a few animals on a boat are a problem for him? Right. It's a problem for man, right? Yet you go back to God, says, "Listen, we started off by me telling you that I made the heaven and the earth." Right? So where can you go from there? Right? "Well, I need a job." Oh my gosh. I know God can make the heaven and the earth. But to get me a job, that's hard. That's really hard, right? See, I mean, it's neat. God is so wonderful. He says, "Okay, I created the heaven and the earth. What do you need now?" Okay, well, kind of limits the rest of life, doesn't it? Right. In Isaiah chapter 38. It wouldn't connect. Maybe she has the wrong time. Genesis, and we looked at Genesis and we saw how God created the heaven and the earth. Now we'll go to Isaiah 38. Verse 1, "In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death, and Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, came unto him and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live. And then Hezekiah turned his face toward the wall and prayed unto the Lord and said, Remember now, O Lord, I beseech thee, how I have walked before thee in truth and with a perfect heart, and have done that which is good in thy sight. And Hezekiah wept sore. Then came the word of the Lord to Isaiah, saying, Go and say to Hezekiah, Thus saith the Lord, the God of David thy father, I have heard thy prayer, I have seen thy tears. Behold, I will add unto thee thy days 15 years." So he was going to allow Hezekiah to live 15 more years. "And I will deliver thee and this city out of the hand of the king of Assyria, and I will defend this city. And this shall be a sign unto thee from the Lord, that the Lord will do this thing that he hath spoken. Behold, I will bring again the shadow of the degrees, which has gone down in the sundial of Ahaz 10 degrees backward. So the sun returned 10 degrees by which degrees it was gone down. Right? So as you know, if you have basic astronomy, like, you know, if you have a Bible here, you know, and sun's over here and the shadow's being cast over there, the only way that shadow can go backwards is what happens? The sun moves, right? You can't. That's the only way to do it, right? Then again, if you believe Genesis 1:1, right, he made all that stuff, right? See, the reason we're looking at these verses today is because it helps us greatly to believe God if we know what he can do, right? If you keep in your mind what God can do and remember what he can do and bring it to your remembrance and bring it to your remembrance, boy, the other stuff is just really, really easy to believe. Right? He can move the, he moved the sun here for a man, Hezekiah, and brought the shadow backwards. Right? That's pretty incredible. Just sit down and think about that for a while, right? When you need a job. Joshua chapter 10. Joshua chapter 10. Verse 1, now it came to pass when Adoni-Zedek, king of Jerusalem, had heard how Joshua had taken Ai and had utterly destroyed it, as he had done to Jericho and her king, so he had done to Ai and her king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them, that they feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city as one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than Ai, and all the men thereof were mighty. Wherefore, Adoni-Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent unto Hoham, king of Hebron, and unto Piram, king of Jarmuth, and unto Japhia, king of Lachish, and unto Deborah, king of Eglon, saying, Come up unto me, and help me, that we may smite Gibeon, for it hath made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel. So they're going to destroy the city. Therefore the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, and the king of Lachish and Eglon, gathered themselves together and went up, they and all their hosts, and encamped before Gibeon and made war against it. And the men of Gibeon sent unto Joshua, because they were friends with Joshua and Israel, right? They needed help, to the camp, to Gilgal, saying, slack not thy hand from thy servants, come up to us quickly, and save us and help us, for all the kings of the Amorites that dwell in the mountains are gathered together against us. So Joshua ascended from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. And the Lord said unto Joshua, fear them not, for I have delivered them into thine hand. There shall not a man of them stand before thee. Joshua therefore came unto them suddenly, and went up from Gilgal all night. And the Lord discomfited them before Israel, and slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon, and chased them along the way that goeth up to Bethhoron, and smote them to Azekah and unto Makkedah. And it came to pass, as they fled from before Israel, and were in the going down to Bethhoron, that the Lord cast down great stones from heaven upon them unto Azekah, and they died, and there were more which died with hailstones than they whom the children of Israel slew with the sword. Hailstones being thrown from heaven. It was all coincidence. Just happened to be a meteorite shower at that time, right? No. Verse 12, then spake Joshua to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel. And he said, in the sight of Israel, sun, stand thou still upon Gibeon, right? And moon, and thou moon, in the valley of Ajalon. Right? So he told the sun and the moon to just stop. I mean, just, you know, you can't casually read a verse like that. Right? Oh, by the way, it's not like saying just close the door. You know, he said to the sun to stop and the moon to stop. If you go back to Genesis 1:1, right? You think God could do that? Do you really believe God could do that? That's the key, right? In your heart, do I believe that God could do that? Right? Because if I believe that, boy, I'm telling you, I want to make sure that God is on my side for my whole life. Right? I don't want to be on the opposite side to the God who can stop the moon and the sun, right? Because that would be just stupid. Verse 13, and the sun stood still, and the moon stayed, right? Until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Is not this written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven, and the hasted not to go down about a whole day. And there was no day like that before it or after it, that the Lord hearkened unto the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. You know, and, you know, there have been various, I'm not sure if the word is rumors, or various bits of information about news about how they found, you know, NASA found a missing day, and that the sundial, and this explained that. I don't know. I don't know the credibility of those things, nor do I think half of them are credible. But the issue is God able, right? The bottom line, you know, I sometimes think science is like man's clumsy attempt to substantiate God. So what if there's science? What do you believe, the science or the God, right? What came first, right? If man gets all excited, we found this, who cares if you found it or didn't find it? Who cares if it's true or not true? Is God true, right? That's the bottom line. Because if I need clumsy science to substantiate God, I'm way out of line, right? God first, right? God first. This is what God's word says. He said in the beginning, he made the heaven and the earth. That's your father. That's your God. Right? What can't he do? Right? Boy, in John chapter 11. John 11. You know, people don't tend to stand around in water coolers and places they work these days talking about all the wonderful things God can do. You know, people may ask the question, well, you know, why doesn't God do that for me? Well, what was Hezekiah doing in his life for God? What was Joshua doing that he would need that kind of help, right? And what am I doing? What are we doing, right? John chapter 11, verse 1. Now a certain man was sick named Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sister sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister, and Lazarus. When he had heard, therefore, that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. Then after that saith he to his disciples, let us go unto Judea again. His disciples say unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and goest thou thither again? And Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of the world. But if a man walk in light night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. These things said he, and after that he saith unto them, our friend Lazarus sleepeth. But I go, that I may wake him out of sleep. Then said his disciples, Lord, if he sleeps, he do well. You know, getting some good rest there. Howbeit Jesus spake of his death, but they thought that he had spoken of taking of rest and sleep. Then said Jesus unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead. He didn't say it that way, probably. No. Lazarus is dead. Okay. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. Then said Thomas, which is called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, let us go also, that we may die with him. Right? You know, great. Like, you know, I don't think he heard what Jesus Christ just said. Which is, we read this record and it's interesting. Like, you know, when you come across tough situations in life, you got to ask the question, did I understand what God just said? Do I understand what God's word says? Have I really looked at it and sat there and thought about it? You know. Then when Jesus came, he found, verse 17, that he had laid in the grave 4 days already. Now Bethany was nigh unto Jerusalem, about 15 furlongs off. And many of the Jews came to Mary and Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Then Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was come, went and met him, but Mary sat still in the house. Then said Martha unto Jesus, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. It's your fault. But I know that even now, whatsoever thou wilt ask of God, God will give it thee. Jesus said unto her, thy brother shall rise again. Martha said unto him, I know that he shall rise again in the resurrection, not the last day. Right? And that's great. She's a believer, isn't she? She believes in the resurrection someday. Someday, what's going to happen? Everybody who's dead is going to rise up, right? Everybody. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believe this? She said unto him, Yea, Lord, I believe that thou art the Christ, the Son of God, which should come into the world. Verse 28. And when she had so said, she went her way and called Mary her sister secretly, saying, The Master is come and calleth for thee. And as soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came unto him. Now Jesus was not yet come into the town, but was in that place where Martha met him. The Jews then which were with her in the house and comforted her when they saw Mary, that she rose up hastily and went out, followed her, saying, She goeth unto the grave to weep there. Then when Mary was come where Jesus was, and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. They both said the same thing to him, right? And when Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled, and said, Where have ye laid him? They said unto him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Right? Then said the Jews, Behold how he loved him. And some of them said, Could not this man, which opened the eyes of the blind, have caused that even this man should not have died? Jesus therefore came groaning in himself, cometh to the grave. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. Jesus said, Take ye away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead 4 days. By that time, you know, things are pretty bad. Jesus said unto her, Said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. And I knew that thou hearest me always. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he thus had spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. Right? The man is dead. Right? You know, I chose this record because just like Genesis 1:1 gives you a good indication of what God can do, well, does it get any worse than death? That's about as bad as it gets, right? I mean, if you're stomped on and dragged behind a car after, you don't care, you're dead. Right? Dead is the point where you forget about everything. Right? Verse 44, and he that was dead came forth. Right? I mean, I've sat down. Have you ever just sat down and just really pictured this record in your mind, just really thought about what's happening here? The guy is dead. They've already gone through mourning for 4 days. It's their brother, and they love him, and he's dead. And Jesus comes down and says, come forth! Right, and the man walks out of the grave. Right? Think about it. Right? Think about when you have a need for help in your life, what's possible? Right? Bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound about with a napkin. Jesus said unto them, Loose him and let him go. Right? Wow, from the dead. You know, remember Paul the Apostle writing in, I think it's Corinthians, where it talks about, you know, we trust in the God which raiseth the dead, right? Because that's it. It doesn't get any worse than being dead, so it doesn't get any, you know, once you make the heavens and the earth, there's nothing else. What's tougher than that, right? What's tougher than raising someone from the dead? And God can do both those things, both of them, right? Look at Job chapter 38. Job 38, just before Psalms. Job 38. I love this section. I just go back to this section when I'm feeling particularly prideful or something like that. You know, daily, right? No. You know, Job 38. And if you've, you know, again, it's really hard to get the force of this chapter without reading Job chapter 31 through 37, right? To see what Job went through with people who were his friends trying to comfort him in his grief, right? And they could not comfort him. And then eventually God speaks, and in chapter 38 God speaks, and it's pretty telling what he says here, you know. And I'd like to take it to heart. Genesis 38, verse 1, "The Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, Who is this that darketh counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up now thy loins like a man, for I will demand of thee, and answer thou me." So God says, I'm going to ask you a few questions now, Job. Verse 4, "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth?" We just read that Genesis 1:1, right? He did that. So apparently, thousands of years or hundreds of years later, God still remembers I did that. Right? He hasn't forgotten about it, you know. God still remembers. So he asked Job, okay, where were you when I made the earth? Right? "Declare if thou hast understanding." Come on, tell me. You know. "Who hath laid the measures thereof? If thou knowest, or who hath stretched the line upon it?" You know, we're measuring some wall the other day. A friend of mine and I were out there with a 25-foot tape measure. It's like a 70-foot wall. Kind of clumsy, you know, you're measuring a wall and the tape only stretches 25 feet, so you have to go over there and mark it a little more, and then stretch it again and do it three times and measure it. And we're not talking about measuring a 70-foot wall here. We're talking about measuring the earth, right? Billion times bigger than that. Guess who can do that, right? God. Verse 6, whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened? Like, what holds everything together? Why doesn't the earth just fly out of its orbit? How does all that work? So he's asking Job. I can just see Job going, I don't know. "Or who laid the cornerstone thereof?" You know, the cornerstone of a building where you have a little stone in the corner and they measure everything off that cornerstone? They got to have one stone right. If that stone is messed up, the rest of the building is going down, right? So they make this one cornerstone right, and they measure all of life from the building from that cornerstone. And if that is perfect, the rest of the building will be perfect. Isn't Jesus Christ called a cornerstone, by the way? He's called the cornerstone because our life is measured from him, and he's perfect. Side point. But God said, where is the cornerstone for the earth and the foundations of the heavens? Where is it? Right. He asked Job, tell me, Job. Right. Verse 7, "When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy, or who shut up the sea with doors when it brake forth as if it had been issued out of the womb? When I made the cloud, the garment thereof, and thick darkness, a swaddling brand for it, and break up for it my decreed place, and set bars and doors, and said, Hither thou shalt thou come, but no further, and here shall thy proud waves be stayed." You know, you've seen all the Perfect Storm and all these movies with all the big, big waves, right? God says to the ocean, you don't go any further than this. You can go over here, but you can't go over here. That's God. A little bit more powerful than, you know, making little canals and, you know. Verse 12, "Hast thou commanded the morning since thy days?" Did you ever tell the sun to come up, Job? Apparently God did twice, right? This Ahaz and Joshua, right? He's still able to do it. "And caused the dayspring to know his place." Verse 22, "Hast thou entered into the treasures of the snow?" You know what that means? I don't. Right? Apparently not did Job. I don't see Job interjecting here. But that's one thing you notice in this whole chapter. Very little said by Job. Why? Because he didn't know. Right? That's the whole point. You know, we dare never bring God down to our level. We let him be God where he is. He's God. He's God Almighty. He made the heavens and the earth. He's the one. He's the one you serve. He's the one we reverence. Right? It's him. Right? "Hast thou entered in the treasures of snow?" I don't even know what they are. A little bit beyond science even, isn't it? "Or hast thou seen the treasures of the hail, which I have reserved against a time of trouble, against a day of battle and war?" What does that mean? Do you know? Job's, I don't know. He's probably crying by this point. Verse 24, By what way is the light parted, which scattereth the east wind upon the earth?" You know, there are prevailing east winds in certain parts of the earth, and certain parts of the wind, there's prevailing west winds, And so, like, there are certain patterns of wind around the earth. Do you know how that works? I don't. Verse 25, who hath divided watercourse for the overflowing of waters, or a way for the lightning of thunder, to cause it to rain on the earth where no man is? Right? Someone's got to make it rain where there's no one living, right? Although man is very, very, you know, intent on controlling the climate today. You know, for gosh sakes. On the wilderness where there is no man, verse 27, to satisfy the desolate and waste ground, and to cause the bud of the tender herb to spring forth. Hath the rain a father? Or who hath begotten the drops of dew? I love it. Isaiah, we'll close in Isaiah 40. We could read records all day about God. And they're great records. Great, great to remember. Great to think about. Isaiah 40. God is not just willing, but he's able to do that which he promises. Right? Isaiah 40. Again, I'm sure we read this chapter 4 or 5 times a year in fellowship. 40:12. Who hath measured the waters in the hollow of his hand? We just read about the waters he keeps in his hand a little while ago. Things called the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, the Indian Ocean, right? And meted out heaven with a span, able to measure the heavens with a measuring tape, right? If you say you can't get your head around it, you're right. You'll never be able to get your head around it. We'll read that verse in a minute here. And comprehended the dust of the earth in a measure, and weighed the mountains in scales, and the hills in a balance. Who hath directed the Spirit of the Lord, or being his counselor, hath taught him? You know, you hear people on TV all the time, well, you know, God is just a crutch, and, you know, people just for the weak and all this. And I'm glad I'm on the side of the guy who made the heavens and the earth, the God who made the heavens and the earth. I wouldn't want to be on the side of those guys who were saying things like that, right? And I heard this whole theory about what happened on that thing that Joshua did with the sun and the moon. You wouldn't believe the things people think on why that happened, right? Boy, why? Because they don't go to Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. You don't believe that. Verse 14, with whom took he counsel? Who was God's counselor? And who instructed him and taught him in the path of judgment and taught him knowledge and showed to him the way of understanding? Behold, the nations are as a drop of a bucket and are counted as a small dust of the balance. Small dust. Behold, he taketh up the islands as a very little thing. And Lebanon is not sufficient to burn, nor the beast thereof sufficient for a burnt offering. All nations before him are as nothing. Don't you ever be afraid of nations and politicians and war and rumors of war and all that stuff. Because before God, they are nothing. Right? You serve a God before whom the nations are nothing. Nothing. Where nothing is? Nothing. That's an easy question. Because something is hard to explain. Nothing? Easy to explain. And they are counted to him less than nothing and vanity. To whom then will you liken God? Or what likeness will you compare unto him? The workman melteth the graven image, and the goldsmith spreadeth it over with gold and casteth silver chains. He that is so impoverished or poor that he hath no oblation or money, choose the tree that will not rot. He seeketh unto him a cunning workman to prepare a graven image that shall not be moved. You see, man is, you always hear people trying to explain God on the things you read in journals. Well, God is this way. Well, God works in mysterious ways. Doesn't say that in the Bible. You know, it doesn't say in that junk, right? God is this, or God can't do this, or why doesn't God do this? Why doesn't God, insurance policies, act? They're always trying to do crap and explain God. God says, who are you going to compare me to? Right? I made the heavens and the earth. That's what he said. Right? You're going to, because man wants to put him in a box and explain him, put him on a little shelf there and worship him and bow down. That's not our God. Verse 21, have you not known, have you not heard, that hath it not been told you from the beginning, Genesis 1:1, have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? There's Genesis 1:1 again. He hasn't forgotten still. It is he that sitteth upon the earth, circle of the earth, and the inhabitants thereof are as grasshoppers, that stretcheth out the heavens as a curtain, You know, we open curtains in the morning. He just pushes aside a few stars and looks out his window. And spreadeth them out as a tent to dwell in, that bringeth the princes to nothing. Don't you be afraid of man. Remember David saying, what is man? You know, like, no, he wasn't afraid of man. Why should you be afraid of man when God made him? He maketh the judges of the earth as vanity. Yea, they shall not be planted, yea, they shall not be sown. Yea, their stalk shall not take root in the earth, and he shall also blow upon them, and they shall wither. And the whirlwind shall take them away as stubble. No reason ever, ever for any of us, anyone who believes in God, to be afraid in any situation in life, because right behind you is God your Father. And this is what we're reading about here, right? No, never be afraid. Remember it was Jeremiah, right? Don't be afraid of their faces, right? Verse 25, to whom then will you liken me? Or shall I be equal? Said the Holy One. Lift up your eyes and high, and behold, who hath created these things? Genesis 1:1. That bringeth out their host by number. He calleth them all by names, by the greatness of his might, for that he is strong in power, not one faileth. Why sayest thou, O Jacob, and speakest, O Israel, my way is hid from the Lord, and my judgment is passed over from my God? Hast thou not known? Hast thou not heard? That the everlasting God, the Lord, or the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, Genesis 1:1, keeps reminding us of it, right? Fainteth not, neither is weary. There is no searching of his understanding. So if you're sitting there saying, I just can't get my head around it, darn right you can't. He says you'll never be able to get your head around it, right? Because there is no searching of his understanding. That's why we call it faith. Believing, right? We just go to him and say, great, you did it, I believe you, fantastic, end of story. Not bring him down to a little level, try to explain to him, well, it was just science, well, it wasn't really all over the earth, just a few of the animals, the hell with all that, right? There is no searching of his understanding. Wow, fantastic. He giveth power to the faint. See that? This wonderful, powerful, almighty God of might and miracles, right? Yet he is concerned about you. Right? He is concerned about you and me, that he would give power to the faint. And to them that have no might, he increaseth strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary, and the young men shall utterly fall. Young lads on the couch. Right? But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary, and they shall walk and not faint. Our God, right, gives us the strength. Our God is a God of might and miracles, right, and power from on high. Remember that song, right? And we just read it, you know. So, you know, don't forget it. Remind yourself of it constantly, daily. You know, if we're trying to believe God in an area, remind yourself of that which God can do, right? I didn't write this. We're just reading it, right? So, I love those verses. You know, you have to read them regularly, you know. Go back to them in your mind, memorize them, put them in your heart, and think about them. So when you go to him, that God, you know, that God that says, you can come to me, and, you know, throne room of grace, just come on in. Doors wide open. We looked at open access last time we met. You know, the great open access he's given to us. That's who we have open access to. The God who did all that, heaven and the earth, stopped the sun and the moon, the shadow, the sundial, raise the dead, right? Then he's the same God right here that you serve right now, right? And his arm is not shortened, right? He even says it himself, you know. So that's that.